I feel the best answer is D. Ask the child in private how the cut and bruise happened. Now, the reason I feel D is the best answer, because I feel if confronted, Helen, the mother, may feel pressured to lie about the injury if, in fact, abuse is involved. The best situation, I feel, is to ask the child when the mother is not present. If that was not a choice, it would be better to either extend the session and discuss it or consider making it an agenda item at the next meeting. However, since D asked the child in private was given as a choice, D is the correct answer. Dr. Slavinko, in his book, Psychotherapy, Confidentiality, and Privileged Communication, writes, child therapy can never be a strictly two-person arrangement. Environmental manipulations, as it is called, may be essential in the treatment of children. As you know, with some children, it is particularly desirable to involve the child's parents in treatment. This goes without saying. As is well known, therapeutic gains with the child will often be short-lived unless the parents are also able to change. A meaningful relationship with the therapist often depends upon cooperation by the parents. The therapist may find sensitive teachers who may be able, in consultation, to contribute effectively to the child's treatment through the teacher-parent relationship. So we're talking about involving teachers, involving parents, and this broad treatment approach, however, and here's the conflict I'm sure you're well aware of, that arises is the problem with confidentiality. How much do you share? The therapist, as a matter of good practice, makes it clear to both the child, if he is old enough, and his parents the type of rapport he will have with each. Confidentiality, viewed realistically, is maintained. The therapist in this situation is working with persons who are directly responsible for the patient or for the client and who can assist in the treatment. Parents, after all, are legally responsible for their children. There are times, however, when it may be necessary to dismiss the parents, as we talked about in question number 4, where there was a suspected abuse by the mother, Helen. The highly publicized battered child syndrome has resulted in the passage of laws requiring that physicians and hospitals report cases of abuse observed in the course of their professional practices, as we're well aware. Physical assaults on children reportedly may be a more frequent cause of death than such well-recognized and thoroughly studied diseases as leukemia, cystic fibrosis, and muscular dystrophy, and it may rank with automobile accidents. Many have expressed the view that such laws would be useless without a clause protecting from retaliation by irate parents who are investigated. Hence, the laws, as you're aware, that have been enacted contain provisions protecting those reporting against any civil liabilities that might arise out of the complications with statutory requirements for confidentiality. By involving children, parents, and the legal system, the questions, as you know, become where do we draw the line regarding confidentiality, and the web of conflicts and conflicting interest becomes even more entangled. The picture becomes even less clear when mental abuse is involved. Now, the area of mental abuse, which may be much more devastating to the child, is harder to enforce than physical abuse. Mental abuse, as we know, is not a tangible thing. One might consider custody cases and other cases involving minors. It is often quite difficult to establish to the satisfaction of the judge that parents are so cruel to their children as to warrant judicial action, or when such a fact is established, there is little the court can do except remove the child from the custody of the parents. It may happen that the abusive parent will not bring their child to therapy for fear of a report, or they may take their child out of therapy should abuse be reported. The issues keep getting more and clearer and more and clearer. Here's the factors to be weighed. A judgment call regarding abuse or possible abuse. With physical abuse, there's physical evidence. With mental abuse, it's a judgment call. And weighing this in relationship to the rights of the child, the rights of the parent, and confidentiality. Catherine Ottinger with the Children's Bureau states, "We do not contend that this law is even a partial answer to the problem of child abuse. It is helping to illuminate the startling size of the problem. We think there are many answers to the question of how to stop the problem of child abuse. Once the child is found, it is up to the whole network of community agencies which exist for the protection of the child to assume their appropriate roles in being sure that the child is kept from being either killed or maimed by any further action on the part of his or her parents. The basic need is obviously to protect the child. In this involvement of a whole network of community agencies and removal from the home, confidentiality is at an increased risk." Remember, the purpose of this course is to stimulate your thinking about ethics and confidentiality. Look at a case study. It doesn't involve child abuse, but it does involve some conflicts regarding minors and confidentiality. This is by Susan Saliday in her article, Minor Misgivings. She states, "A 17-year-old patient, Jeff, came in with his 22-year-old friend, Rob. When a staff nurse asked Jeff if he had a parent who could give consent for treatment, he explained that his parents were divorced and his mother, who had custody of him, was out of town. He gave the staff the phone number of his grandfather, who consented to the treatment. Jeff was then treated for hemorrhoid lacerations secondary to foreign body obstructions. A few days later, the staff received a call from an angry woman who identified herself as Jeff's mother. She had just gotten the statement of charges for her son's care and insisted on knowing what kind of treatment was done and why. She said her son denies ever receiving care at the hospital. What about the ethics of confidentiality in this situation? To protect the patient's confidentiality, your ethical responsibility to your patient may conflict with the law. There's probably more to this situation than meets the eye, I'm sure you'll agree. For example, although Jeff is technically a minor, he's nearly an adult, so this gets into that gray area of confidentiality that we've been talking about. And he may be estranged or emancipated from his parents. This will certainly affect what information the hospital can release from the medical record. Also, it affects to whom the information can be released and whether the hospital needs Jeff's consent or not. Let's look at question number 5, which is related to child abuse. Put yourself in this situation. You have a client, Susie. She's age 12. She tells you during the session that she has been sexually abused by her father. Susie immediately breaks into tears as she fears that you will report it. Now, first response should be what? A. Calm the child and ask for a further clarification of the abusive situation. Or B. Explain to the child that you have no choice and must report this immediately. Or C. Tell the child that it is for the best and to trust your judgment. Or D. Explain the legal requirements and what will probably happen to the child as a result of the abuse.